begins with the words, Heim Amru Shlosha Dvarim. They said three things. Let's just give a little bit of background to this Mishnah, and then we'll delve into the Mishnah itself. The previous Mishnayot had introduced us to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was the leader of the Jewish people, one of the most critical moments of Jewish history, during the period during which the second Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, and the Jews were prohibited from living in Yerushalayim after. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the Gemara famously tells us, appeared before the person of general administration, General Astasyanov, in charge of the siege around Yerushalayim. And at that time he said that although Yerushalayim couldn't be spared, he wanted the right to be able to move the Sanhedrin to the town of Yavne, which still exists today in Eretz Israel, west of Yerushalayim, closer to the Mediterranean Sea. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai really enabled the Jewish people to get through the very, very traumatic period of time of the Churban HaBayis. The Mishnah Yehovah described how Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai had five preeminent Talmidim, five preeminent students, and in previous shiurim, I had discussed how Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai really had many students, but it was these students who exemplified the qualities which enabled Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai to build his life after the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash. So the Mishnayos and Rabbi Yochanan spend a little bit of time describing the special qualities of these five students. Talks about the relative merits of these five students. You know, if you can rank one as being higher above the other one, how would you do that? It talks about each of these students' perception of the best model, so to speak, to bring people closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then after all of that, in Mishnah Tetzvah, this is chapter 2, Mishnah 15, in Pirkei Avos, and again, let me just remind everyone who's coming on the call now, if you could mute your phone by just pressing *6. So it says that Heim Amru Shlosha Dvarim, each of these three preeminent students of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai shared three things. They said three things, right? The Bar Tanura, not to be confused with the wine, but Rabbi Ovadia of Bar Tanura, who is one of really the preeminent commentator on Mishnayos, points out that it's not entirely correct to say that each of these great sages that we're going to learn about only said three things. I mean, that would be a very limited CV. You know, sometimes they have scholars and residents who come out to a community for Shabbos, and they basically have three things they can talk about, you know, so that works. I mean, if you invite them out once, they speak Friday night, they speak Shabbos day, they speak Shabbos in the afternoon, and then they're done with all of their presentations. But that, you know, that wasn't the case with these holy Tanoim. Says the Bar Tanura, says Rabbi Ovadia Bar Tanura, that there were three things that these great sages used to stress constantly. You know, these were models that these sages would reiterate and, you know, constantly speak about, because they were words by which they guided their lives. So let's start with the first of these five sages and learn about the three things that he had to say, you know, his three guiding principles which he spoke about on a regular basis. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Rabbi Eliezer said, so before we even get into the three things which Rabbi Eliezer said, a little bit of biographical information about Rabbi Eliezer is in order. Rabbi Eliezer's full name is Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus, son of Hyrcanus. And if you learn Mishnayos or Gemara and the like, Rabbi Eliezer is quoted constantly throughout the Mishnayos and the Gemara. He's one of the most prolific Tanoim, the sages of the Mishnah that we're aware of. There's a whole medrash that's entitled the Pirkei the Rabbi Eliezer, the chapters of Rabbi Eliezer. It consists of teachings that are taught primarily by Rabbi Eliezer, and it opens up the first chapter, the biography of Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer had a fascinating biography. The Medrash says in the beginning of Pirkei to Rabbi Eliezer that he was raised in a very wealthy family, and, you know, was part of the overseeing of the vast tracts of land that were owned by that family. And yet, we're taught in the Medrash that Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus was 28 years old, and he had never learned Torah. I guess, you know, schools in his part of the world were closed for a really, really long time. But he had never learned Torah, even though he was 28 years old. And one day on a whim, he decided that he wanted to go to Yerushalayim and to learn Torah. So, you know, he took off to Yerushalayim. This was before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. And he encountered Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Really an unusual story. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was, as we said before, the Gadol HaDor, the most preeminent Torah scholar at that time. And he went before Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai and he said, I want to learn. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said, so did you ever learn anything? You know how to read? You know how to read Chumash? You know, nothing, doesn't know anything. So the story goes as follows. And again, it, you know, if you translate this in contemporary terms, it's a staggering story. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says the Medrash in Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer, sat down with Rabbi Eliezer, and he taught him how to bench. He taught him how to say Kriya Shema. You know, he was the Gadol HaDor sitting with this neophyte who really knew nothing and just teaching him the most basic of things. And Rabbi Eliezer was an incredible student. He absorbed everything and just kept, you know, soaking up more and more and more and more. Ultimately, one day, his father, Hyrcanus, came to Yerushalayim with the intention of disinheriting Rabbi Eliezer. You know, my crazy son, he went off to Yerushalayim and joined some kollel somewhere. And he gets there, and there's Rabbi Eliezer, whom his father didn't recognize, sitting next to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, you know, at the dais, you know, at the front of some convocation. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai invites Rabbi Eliezer to say words of Torah, and he wows the entire audience. And tell Hyrcanus, that's your son. So the father is so overwhelmed that, you know, he raises the son and, you know, gives up any idea of disinheriting him. In fact, he says, I want to give you the lion's share of my inheritance. Gemara says about Rabbi Eliezer that he never said that over anything that he had not heard from his Rebbe. And Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal explained what that means, because, you know, it's a very strange kind of statement. I mean, Rabbi Eliezer certainly makes statements which are very creative, you know, which are very original. So Rav Soloveitchik says that whatever Rabbi Eliezer said over, he said over in the style or based on the methodology of his Rebbe, of his Rebbeim. In other words, you know, he may have said creative, original things, but, you know, they were always tested, you know, by the following question: would my Rebbe have said this? You know, is this in line with the style of thought, of the, you know, kind of approach which my Rebbe would have had? So, in that way, you know, he was always saying over things that he heard from his Rebbe, even if the Rebbe had not said them per se, but there was a sort of thing which, since he knew his Rebbeim's Torah so well, there was sort of things that his Rebbeim would have said. The Mishnah of Pirkei Avos earlier describes Rabbi Eliezer as a bor sud she'eino ma'aveh tipa. He was like a cistern that's well cemented, and because it's well cemented, the cistern doesn't lose even a single drop of water. In other words, he was, you know, he was a walking encyclopedia, Rabbi Eliezer. Whatever you told him, just absorbed like a sponge, and, you know, he was just incredibly knowledgeable, even among his peers, who, again, obviously were the great and holy Tanoim, who knew a ton as well, but even among his peers, he counts as having this encyclopedic kind of knowledge. Okay, so that's a little bit of an introduction to Rabbi Eliezer, and, you know, we'll see if we can relate some of the biography of Rabbi Eliezer to some of the statements which he's about to make. So first of all, since Rabbi Eliezer, Yehi chavod avercha, chavid alecha kishavach. Let your fellow's honor be dear to you as your own. In other words, in simple terms, honor your friend, be nice to your friend, give kavod to your friend, respect your friend. How much should you respect your friend? So as much as you would like to be respected, that's how much you should respect your friend. Some of the Mefarshim draw a parallel between this statement of Rabbi Eliezer and the famous statement of Hillel, recorded in the Gemara Shabbos, that, you know, when a certain individual, a non-Jew, came before Hillel HaZaken, the Hillel the Elder, and he asked him, can you summarize the entire entire Torah for me on one foot. Gairani Amanas, you know, convert me. On the condition that you can teach me all of the Torah on one, while I'm standing on one foot. So Hillel said, no sweat, no big deal. So Allah Sami Khabrah Sabbath, whatever is hateful to you, don't do to your friend. In other words, use your own feeling as a barometer as to how you should act vis-a-vis your friend. So Rabbi Lezer is giving a very, very similar kind of statement. You know, you should honor your friend. How much should you honor your friend? As much honor as you like to be given to you, that's the kind of honor that you should extend to your friend. Use yourself as a barometer to figure out how to relate to your friend. There's a very fascinating interpretation of Chaim Volozhin on this particular statement of Rabbi Eliezer. Chaim Volozhin, as we know, was the founder and Rosh Hashiva of the Volozhin Yeshiva, which was in Volozhin, as fate would have it, founded in the early 1800s. And as we know, the Volozhin Yeshiva was the first modern-style yeshiva in Lithuania. It had set classes, it had dormitories, it had a lot of the trappings of the yeshiva that we're used to today. And the yeshiva in Volozhin really created the model for the modern yeshiva that we have today. All of the yeshivas in Volozhin also look close, but all of the yeshivas which we have today really were offshoots from the yeshiva in Volozhin. So Chaim Volozhin used to give shiurim, the yeshiva in Volozhin, I believe on Erev Shabbos, in Pirkei Avos. After Chaim Volozhin passed away, so the shiurim were written up and given the title Ruach Chaim, you know, based on the drushes that he gave. So Chaim Volozhin says in interesting shot, Yehi chavod chaver chachavod lecha kishalach. May the covenant that's given to you, the covenant of your friend, be as dear to you as your own. Usually, this is Chaim Volozhin, usually we interpret the words kavod chavercha, your fellow's honor, as the honor which you give to your friend. Right? In other words, you should extend the same honor to your friend as you would want to be given to you. And that's certainly true. But Chaim Volozhin says this deeper meaning as well. Kavod chavercha can mean the honor which your friend gives to you. The honor that your friend gives to you should be as beloved to you as the honor that you give to others. What does that mean? So Chaim Volozhin notes the following phenomena, and I think we can all relate to this phenomena. There's a certain kind of person who, even when he's being honored and dignified by others, tends to belittle the honor that's given to him. You know, I just made a chasana, and so-and-so stopped by to wish we modeled them. Yeah, that's so nice. But you know what? If you would have given me a nicer present, it would have been even nicer. Right? I just, you know, they were mechabit mini in shul with an aliyah. That's great. Why not shlishi? Right? Why only get shvi'i or rafi'i? They don't think I'm chashuv enough to be able to get shlishi. You know, that's a certain kind of person that even if they give him honor, so he looks askance at the honor. He can't understand, you know, why they're not getting him more honor. And yet, when that same person is called upon to honor others, he doesn't dish out the amount of honor that he thinks he should get. You know, he is very quick to criticize others when they don't honor him sufficiently. But he's not as quick to bestow honors upon others. If he becomes a gava, he'd be giving the guy, you know, forget about the Ravi, forget about Shvi. You know, maybe he'd give the guy Glila on the second section of it. You know, that's his, you know, approach to everything. So that's what Ruchai Volozhin, what Rabbi Lezer means. The same way that you think highly of the covenant, the level of honor that you give to others, so too you should acknowledge and validate the covenant that others give to you. You know, if people are giving you covenant, the appropriate response is not to say, why only so much covenant and not more? The appropriate response is to appreciate whatever covenant is being given to the person, you know, assuming that it's being given in a heartfelt fashion and in a proper fashion. So that's one thing Rebbe Lezer said. You should not be quick to anger. You know, anger is, as the Ramban writes in his famous letter, you know, undermine all of the other ethos, all of the other character traits that a person has. Chazal say that when a person gets angry, he forgets his Torah learning. Chazal say when a person gets angry, as if he's worshipping Avodah Zarah, he's worshipping idolatry because he sees himself as the center of everything. How dare they do that to me? So, you know, you should be quick to anger. You know, they tell the story of one of the Gedolei HaChassidus, they tell the story about one of the Gedolei HaMusar, you know, insert your favorite rabbi's name into the story, but they tell the story about some great rabbi who had an anger jacket. You know, he made up that he would only get angry if he put a certain jacket on. So when somebody would, you know, light his fuse, so to speak, he would say, wait a minute, you know, I can't get angry now, I have to first put on my angry jacket. And, you know, in the course of putting on his angry jacket, so already, as you know, it took him a few moments to put that on, yeah, just to button all the buttons, and, you know, that enabled him to calm down already. The Abarbanel, in Achlus Avos, you know, his commentary on Pirkei Avos makes an interesting observation with this regard on the Pasuk in Mishlei. The Pasuk in Mishlei says that Kas b'chnei k'silim yonuach, that anger rests in the lap of the fool. So says the Abarbanel, it's impossible to tell a person, don't ever get angry. The question is, what happens when you do get angry? The fool allows anger to sit in his lap, meaning he lets the anger seethe inside of him. You know, he won't let go of the anger. The wise person will get angry, but you know, he does everything he can once he experiences that moment of anger to try to push the anger away and not allow it to be enough, not allow it to rest and to settle in that person. And, you know, that's the environment says. That's what Rabbi Elazar is saying over here as well. Don't be quick to anger. You know, just get rid of it. You should do tshuva. You should repent one day before you die. Elsewhere, not here, but elsewhere, the Gemara elaborates that, of course, you don't know who's going to die. So, really, what Rabbi Elazar is saying, Shuv Yom Echal Lefein Mitzvasta, you know, repent one day before you die, means that every day of your life you should be repenting, because you never know when that, you know, final day is going to be. So the person should spend his entire life, you know, always making tshuva an important part of his life. For those who are there, Shabbat, tshuva drasha this day of the year, we actually discussed an idea from Rav Kook, but now, where Rav Kook in his Oral Tshuva, developed the idea that tshuva is not just correcting mistakes, but tshuva is really a constant process of growing. Tshuva is about improvement, not just about rectification. So, you know, Shuv Yom Echal Lefein Mitzvasta, you know, can be understood to mean in that light as that the person throughout his life is constantly looking to grow and improve, not just to rectify mistakes in the narrow sense of the term, but to become a better person. I think they say also from Rav Sadia Gaon that the Rav Sadia Gaon says that every day he would do tshuva on the mitzvot of the previous day, meaning not that he regretted doing the mitzvot, but every day as he was growing as a spiritual person, he understood that his mitzvot for the previous day could be improved upon. So he was a person who was not constantly looking to improve. The heve mitzchanim kineged uran shel chachamim. Rabbi Elazar says you should warm yourself by the fire of the sages. But beware of their glowing coal, lest you be burnt. So here, Eliezer uses an image, a mashal, a parable, which is a very, very striking parable. Say to Mepharshim, what Rabbi Eliezer is trying to bring out over here is the following idea. You should develop a kind of lifestyle where you become very close to Talmidei Chachamim, where you become very close to Torah scholars, and at the same time, you shouldn't become so close that you become overly familiar. Alright, so let's just talk about that statement a little bit, and then we'll see how it goes back into the words of Rabbi Eliezer. The first part of the statement, that you should become close to Talmidei Chachamim, probably doesn't require too much explanation. Again, if we really believe that Talmidei Chachamim, you know, the Torah scholars can show us the right way in which we should improve ourselves spiritually. We should grow in Torah, we should grow in Midos, we should go closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You know, so it's almost like a no-brainer that you should, become close to Talmid HaKham through your life. I mean, after all, the Gemara teaches us that when the Torah says that we should cling to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right, it means to include Talmidei Chachamim as well. That, clinging to Talmidei Chachamim, is sort of clinging to HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. Talmidei Chachamim are the conduit through which we can appreciate the Torah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If we want to grow in Torah learning, we should come close to Talmidei Chachamim. They, in turn, will enable us to grow close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's fine. That makes sense. But what does it mean that you should become too close to Talmidei Chachamim? Don't get too close. So here, it's like the Mefarshim, Rabbi Eliezer is putting his finger on something which I think many of us can relate to. When you become too close to Talmidei Chachamim, or too close to anybody, there's a certain familiarity which is developed, which causes you to, on some level, lose respect for that person. Now, let me qualify that. The sign of a really great person is that the closer you become to that person, and the more you see of that person up front and up close, you develop even more respect for that person, not less respect for that person. Again, there's a certain kind of great person who's in the public limelight, who's really impressive, and then you get to see the person close up, and you say, ach and vey, half of the world thinks that this is a great person. That's a phenomenon which is out there. But, really great people, you can grow close to them. And, when you see their private actions and how they are in a more intimate setting, it increases the amount of respect that you have for them. So we certainly hope that's an accurate description of Talmidei Chachamim. If you have Talmidei Chachamim who strike a nice pose, but then when you get to know them on a personal level, they're awful, terrible people. So that's a terrible thing, We wouldn't want our Talmidei Chachamim to fall into that category. But at the same time, if you're very, very close to a Talmid Chacham, even if you still respect that person, if you see the great things about that person, there's a certain degree of familiarity that causes you to lose a little bit of the respect. Not because of anything that person did, which causes you to lose the respect, but, somebody you see in a more intimate, relaxed kind of setting, by definition, some of the reverence which is supposed to accompany the relationship between a student and a Talmud Chacham is going to be lost a little bit, and the relationship between a Rebbe and a Talmud is built on a certain amount of reverence and awe, which, you can't really replace. There's a Gemara in Shabbos, which I think reflects this as well. A very beautiful Gemara in Shabbos. The Gemara says that a person who has reverence for Talmidei, a person who loves Talmidei Chachamim, will have children who are Talmidei Chachamim, Madarachim, Tzuvim, Rabbanim, Havli, Bonim, the Rabbanim. And one who has reverence for Talmud Chacham, he himself will become a Talmud Chacham. So what's the difference? I think the difference is exactly this idea. If you feel that, if you love Talmidei Chacham, if you have that up-close, familiar relationship with them, where they're almost like buddy-buddy with you, so that's a beautiful thing, and your children will see that, and they'll admire, the Talmid Chacham because of his relationship with you, and they'll grow up to aspire to be Talmidei Chachamim. But you yourself won't really be able to become a Talmud Chacham if your relationship with that Talmud Chacham is so buddy-buddy and so familiar, because there's a certain aspect of reverence which is going to be lost. So you can pass on that reverence to your children, because from your children's perspective, they see you as an authority figure, and they see the Talmud Chacham as an authority figure, but you'll never quite, get that reverence yourself if you're too buddy-buddy with the Talmud Chacham. In contrast, Gemara says that if you have a certain fear and reverence and awe for the Talmud Chacham, so that is the way to cultivate becoming a Talmud Chacham yourself because of the essential aspect of that one reverence for the Talmud Chacham. So Rabbi Lezer says this idea, become close to Talmud Chacham, but not too close, and he uses the following beautiful image to really capture that. He says, you know, let's say a person's sitting by a campfire. So, you know, if you're, you know, we can dream of summer already, right? If a person is sitting by a campfire, so if you're sitting too far away from the campfire, you don't feel anything, you know? So you're not warmed up by the campfire. You have to come close to the campfire in order to feel it. But on the other hand, if even when the fire is out, you then go and stick your hand and grab a hot coal from the fire, you'll burn yourself. So it's important to come close to the fire, but not too close to the fire. And that's the beautiful language that you have in Chaven, Kinegan Uron Shochachaven. Warm yourself up with the fire of the Chachamim of the sages. That is Zar the Gachalton Shlokikoven. But be very careful when it comes to the coal, which is at the center of the fire, that which produces the fire, the most intimate part of the fire, don't touch that. Stay away from the most intimate contact with the Talmud Kocha. Shalosi Kocha, because you're going to be burnt by necessity. If, you know, in other words, your relationship with Talmud Kocha will suffer. Your Yerushalayim is going to suffer. If you come too close into proximity, you know, you have to, there's a certain amount of, let's call it, distancing. Which you have to have, use the Talmud Chacham. You have to come close, but, you know, not quite close. You know, I remember there was, you know, the years I was in Eretz Yisrael, so, one of the popular Rosh Yeshiva was Rabbi Kushalevsky, focused on sign against the law of the Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. I remember, Rabbi Tzvi was enacted, he would never take his hat off in front of the Talmudim. He never appeared in front of the Talmudim with a yarmulke, you know, always. Either with the talus over his head, you know, come out from his office, his medrash with the talus already over his head, or he wears his hat all the time, even when he's shiurim. And again, you know, some are into that style, some are not into that style, but, you know, it was a way of cultivating a certain amount of reverence and a certain amount of distance, which is not overplayed to be something which is very valuable, because it creates that certain amount of reverence, which is very, very important. Why should you not come too close to the Talmud Chacham? Shine Shichatzon, Shichat Shua. Their bite is the bite of a fox. Vakitzatzon, Akitzat Akra. Their sting is the sting of a scorpion. Olachishatzon, Lachishat Sarav. Their hiss is the hiss of a serpent. V'chol Divayim Kigachalei Eish. All of their words are like fiery coals. Now the point of this last stitch seems to be, if you get too close to the Talmud Chacham, they'll hurt you. You know, in other words, not that they're going to physically hurt you, but again, like we said before, an overly exaggerated sense of intimacy with the Talmud Chacham is not beneficial to you in the long run. You know, it's going to cause you to lose a certain amount of reverence and respect for the Talmud Chacham. But what's striking is the very colorful and multiple colorful images that Rebbe Lezer uses. Why getting too close to the Talmud Chacham is not a good thing. They're going to bite you like a fox. They're going to sting you like a scorpion. They're going to hiss at you like a serpent. Whoa, okay, I get it. It's not a good thing. So why the repetition of all of these different sort of turns of phrase? So that's the Mishnah in a nutshell. What I want to stop with tonight is to pose the following question and then leave everyone on a cliffhanger. So that hopefully encourage people to come back tomorrow night. So just to ponder the following. The Mishnah starts off by saying, "Heim Amru Shlosha Dvarim." Right? Each of these Talmidim Chacham, each of these Talmidim of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said three things. And then it goes on to list the three things that Rabbi Eliezer said. If you start counting, it seems like there are these five different things that he said. Your friend's honor should be as dear to you as your own. You should not be quick to anger. You should do tshuva a day before you die. You should warm yourself by the fire of Talmid Chachamim. Don't touch, however, their coal, lest you be hurt. And then it goes on to talk about, you know, all of the, you know, the stinging and the hissing and the biting and all the things Talmid Chachamim are going to metaphorically do to the person if you get too close. That's a lot more than three. I mean, I was not a mad person. I'm still not a mad person. Don't send me to the store to buy stuff. But that seems to be more than three. So what's going on over here? So I'm going to leave with that cliffhanger. What I I want to do is come back tomorrow and discuss not only the answer to that question, but deepen our understanding of several of the things that Rabbi Elazar said in this Mishnah. And Ezek Hashem, that is our plan for tomorrow. So that's Joseph Pirkei Avos. Wanted to take a moment to say once again two chapters of Tehillim.